So for our second interview for the program today, we have Alex Bainbridge, who is National Co-Convener of Socialist Alliance. And the reason why we have him on the program today is Alex just recently wrote an article about this kind of new attack on small parties that has just been voted up into the parliament with the support of Labor. So, Alex, what can you tell us about this new legislation that has been passed, and why is it a big attack on small parties within, like, electorally?
Well, as you're probably aware, Jacob, I'm not a big fan of Australia's political system. I don't think it's really a very representative and democratic system. But the truth of the matter is, these most recent changes make Australia even less democratic. So what are the changes? Number one, there's more restrictions on parties, small parties seeking registration. So this is explicitly, the big parties have explicitly said they're trying to wipe smaller parties off the ballot paper to give voters less choice. And my contention is that, you know, who is the government and the elected representatives in Australia should be the decision of the voters, not the big establishment parties that are backed up by capitalist dollars and capitalist interests. So how is this happening? The first, I mean, I guess the most dramatic thing is that parties now have to demonstrate they need 1,500 members, which is up from 500. And there's also additional restrictions on the names that parties are allowed to have. So this will be some parties, even long-running parties, will have to automatically change their names or else no longer be registered. And there are a number of other changes as well.
Mm. And one of the kind of things is what can you, in contrast, I guess, to some of the current kind of settings, because you note in the article, I guess, that the current settings already kind of advantage the big parties. And I guess in terms of these kind of changes, how will that be even more kind of entrenched?
Well, at the moment, there's an automatic privilege for anybody who is elected to Parliament. So, I mean, one of the examples I used in the article was, people might remember Cory Bernardi a few years ago was a Liberal senator. Now, he was elected on the Liberal Senate ticket, which is basically like, in the sense of, you know, he was appointed by backroom party officials onto the Senate ticket, and people voted Liberal, but they didn't necessarily vote Cory Bernardi. He demonstrated zero personal support from among the electorate. But he left the Liberal Party, and instantly overnight he can register the Australian Conservatives without having to show a single a single skerrick of community support. So that's basically the privilege that any elected parliamentarian, and in particular the big, you know, people get elected on the, you know, the big party tickets. Pauline Hanson was never elected by One Nation by herself. She was elected initially on the Liberal ticket. And this is the case for a lot of the right-wing parties. So this is basically an automatic privilege for the existing parliamentary parties.
Hmm. And I guess one of the other interesting things is to note in the kind of article, you kind of noted that there was apparently this kind of big kind of push around within the kind of the discussion and debate around this kind of bill. There was kind of like a discussion about supporting kind of measures to kind of prevent multiple kind of voting. And I guess you sort of comment that, you know, that issue doesn't sort of stack up in terms of its kind of legitimacy. And I guess I want to kind of hear your comments to kind of that effect on that.
Look, I think if you can look over to the United States, and anyone who is paying attention, you know, can see that there's a big worry, the sort of level of conspiracy theories and the right-wing unhinged conspiracy theories that even establishment politicians are prepared to support. Now, one of these is, of course, I mean, the big lie that Trump pushed about the stolen election. And just more generally, there is a long-running, decades-running, long before Trump, there is a decades-long push of voter suppression, so particularly targeted against voters of colour in the United States. And the rationale for this voter suppression is the need to protect the integrity of the vote and to basically stop fraudulent voting. But in the United States, there is, you know, very little, minimal, negligible evidence of voter fraud. Like, it's a big scaremonger, but it's not an actual practical problem. And it's the same in Australia. I mean, like, the actual demonstrated examples of people voting more than once at election is, like, this minuscule it's really not a practical concern. Whereas, you know, but one of the package of four bills that the government brought in was ostensibly designed to protect the security of the ballot. Now, there are a lot of things that could be done that would automatically give voters a much more representative and more democratic input into how society is running. Now, I mean, to me, I think that the number one would be to move towards a proportional system. So right now we have a situation where the Greens, for example, get more than 10% of the vote. Every election they get more than 10% of the vote in the lower house. In the lower house they have less than 1% of the seats. So more than 10% of the vote translates into less than 1% of the seats. And in general, the voter share between the major parties, Labor and the Coalition, it goes up and down, but the long-term trend is to a decreasing voter share for the major parties. But they still have the overwhelming, majority, more than their share of the vote would indicate. They've got a bigger share of the seats in the lower house. So a move towards a proportional voting system. And even New Zealand has got a proportional voting system where you can still have an individual local member. So you can still have that sort of personal connection, if that means anything, with a local member, at the same time as having a proportional electoral system. So that, for example, that change would be a significant change in the Australian context, but it's also very simple and practical change that would instantly give voters a much more direct, it would be an expansion of democracy in Australia, not a contraction. These changes are in fact a contraction of democracy.
And I guess I want to kind of hear your kind of comments on how this new legislation disproportionately really attacks the left as opposed to the right, because, you know, in reality, I mean, there's a lot of right-wing minor parties that have positions kind of within Parliament with like one kind of seat or something. I want to kind of hear your sort of assessment and your kind of take on why this legislation actually disproportionately disadvantages the left as opposed to these sort of right-wing kind of micro kind of parties.
Look, I think that really anyone with money can buy the means to get around any of these provisions in the electoral law. I mean, I think Clive Palmer has demonstrated that in recent years, like without any shadow of a doubt. If you have got money, you can get around any of these laws, which is why what is needed is not kind of restrictions to make it harder for parties to get onto the ballot, but to give voters more of a meaningful vote so that their opinions matter more. And look, you know, as I said, yeah, if anyone with money, which is basically, I mean, the right, you know, automatically, is more inclined to have the backing of, big business support, even if it's small, you know, isolated fractions of big business like Clive Palmer is, or as, you know, the well-funded churches, you know, were able to establish Family First, for example, that's not so much an option that is available to the left. Just because, you know, there is, you know, the left strength is in people power, not in money. But the other point I'd add on to that is, it's not just the electoral system and the voting rules. If you look at the broader system of capitalist power, and in particular when you factor in the corporate media into that, it's very clear. You look over the last immediate years, decades. The media gives a lot more attention to right-wing parties, even if it's critical attention, than to the left. I mean, the media strategy against the left overwhelmingly is to ignore it. Whereas the establishment media, they will report the fact that there is a QAnon conspiracy theory. They might be critical of it, but it gives it oxygen and airplay and makes more people aware of it. Over the years, there's been heaps of criticism against Pauline Hanson's One Nation from the major parties. But it still gives the implicit setting to people that pay attention to that media that, you know, that the right is an opposition force. Whereas against the left, their main method of trying to combat us is to ignore us, and that frankly helps. And the reason for that is because Well, the establishment knows that the far-right opposition is not actually a challenge to the capitalist system, it's not a challenge to capitalist rule, and it's not a challenge to their interests. It's actually helpful for them. for there to be a strong far right, because it puts right wing pressure on the major parties and makes it, you know, makes it easier for them to find excuses not to implement the more popular progressive policies. So I think that's why, I mean, there are multiple ways in which the system is rigged more towards the right than towards the left. It is, you know, it is harder for the left to break through, but people need to remember it's not impossible. But it does require a concerted people power effort. And actually, the one other point I might make while I'm talking, if it's okay, I think it's really important that people realise that these changes to electoral laws that are undemocratic, they've come from the coalition's initiative, but Labor's support was critical to getting them passed. If it hadn't been for Labor's support, it's very unlikely that it would have been, well, to say the least, it would have been much harder to get these changes through.
Okay. Well, I think we're running a bit out of time too, but do you have, I guess, any kind of final comments you'd like to make to sort of conclude this discussion?
Look, I think the final point to emphasise is, sure, this is less democratic. It's a big attack on ordinary people. But what we need to remember is people power is stronger than all of their politicians, all of their money, all of their media, all of their military, all their police power. People power is stronger. So it's not a reason to give up. It's actually, if anything, a reason to give extra support to left-wing organisations like the Socialist Alliance and other progressive organisations as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alex. This is definitely a massive attack on democracy, and I think, yeah, we should all be opposed to it.
Thanks, Jacob.
All right. So we're just having a discussion with Alex Bainbridge, National Co-Convener of the of Socialist Alliance, about this new legislation that attacks the small parties. And in fact, nowadays it is looking like under this new law for the next kind of federal kind of election, for political parties to be registered, they have to demonstrate that they have over 1,500 members. Although that said, that's not in theory. This doesn't stop any party from like running the election, but to get state registration, well, i.e. have your name present on the ballot paper, you essentially will have to prove that you have over 1,500 names. So yeah, it's definitely a big attack, and I think, yeah, it should definitely be. It's always interesting that the federal parliament always looks kind of for measures to restrict small parties, despite the fact that they constantly insist that small parties are useless and you should just vote for the major parties like the Labour Party or the Liberals.
Yes. If small parties were actually useless, they wouldn't be threatened by us.
Yeah.